please come into my room.
What's up? Back in the Mustache Room. I'm your host, David Ben. Thank you for joining. On this episode, my good friend Sean joins us. He's a yoga instructor, a breathing expert. He is familiar with holotropic breathing, which is awesome. We also are joined by wifey Jill, who educates us on the chicken of the woods mushroom, not to be confused with fried chicken mushroom, which tastes like radishes. Disgusting. Want to give a shout out to our one and only sponsor, mustachebrands.com. That's spelled M-U-S-T-A-S-H. Visit us online at mustacheroom.com or at mustacheroom on social media. Love you guys. You're going to love this episode. Here you go.
I've been thinking about this, and I'm excited to have this conversation with you. And it's really cool to, because I spend all my time talking about yoga, movement, massage. And so when somebody's interested and they want to know about it, that's all I could want.
Yeah, no teacher wants to talk to an audience on their phones, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, we've had to do some of that lately, but it's you know, take what we can get.
The pandemic has made it a challenge for sure. Education. But no, I'm glad you're here. We know each other from jiu-jitsu, but you're also a yoga instructor. I know you do massage. The reason I thought it'd be cool for you to join us is you do a lot of things, both professionally and non-professionally, that play right into our whole methodology with the podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, mental improvement, better state of consciousness, just exploration of oneself. So I thought it'd be really cool to kind of talk about maybe how you see the facets of what you do kind of playing into that hand and just kind of get your perspective.
Absolutely, man.
So what with yoga, how long have you been an instructor or been involved in yoga, period?
So I've been a teacher for about 6 years, and I've been practicing for probably 10 years before that. Not so consistently. Like, I had to become a teacher to make it like an everyday thing, which is what it is now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Black Swan, Denver, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's where I'm working right now.
Awesome.
Yep. So we might as well plug that.
Yeah. You now, Black Swan, Chris, who's been on the podcast, and Felix are both from Texas, Chris specifically from Austin. Mm-hmm. So he's very familiar with Black Swan. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of where it started off?
Austin is the birthplace of Black Swan. And then it moved to Houston, then Dallas and San Antonio. And this is the first one outside of Texas. So
cool.
It's pretty amazing.
And you were involved in like the founding of this chapter of Black Swan, right?
The Denver chapter.
The Denver chapter. Okay, cool.
Yes.
So what like, I've done some of your yoga, and it's awesome, and I felt it was both a good workout and really well done, but what do you think makes Black Swan different from, like, the Peloton yoga or, you know, Core Power or the other stuff that people might be working with?
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the things, like, for example, so you go to a Core Power, you go to one of these nationwide chains, and what you get is a lot of consistency.
Yeah,
you get, you know, there's not going to be many surprises. You're going to get a really high quality product. That's the same in California as it is in Denver, as it is in New York. And then, so with Black Swan, what we're trying to do is really get our teachers to be themselves. I think that is just a message that a lot of people need to hear these days, is just be yourself. And so what we want our teachers to do is just do what they do best. If that's Kundalini yoga, if that's like, we have one teacher that does vision quests. So it's like a restorative yoga, and she'll do a vision. She'll guide you through a vision quest. She did one for our audition to Kiana and I.
I don't even know what that means. What is a vision quest?
So it's like, it's basically a guided meditation. She like gives you certain prompts, like certain visuals.
Okay.
You know, either, specific, some are specific, some are like more general, as in like, okay, we're going to give you this carpet that you're on, and then you're going to fly, and then you choose where you go.
So it's all fictional. It's all in your head.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So yeah, she guides you through that. And which is just a great way to, tap into the moment. So anyways, there's just quite a variety of stuff that we want to offer. So it's different in that, like, if you're at Core Power, which I've taught there before, you're teaching a very set sequence.
The flow is always the same.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, and then there's just certain parameters that you have to meet as a teacher there.
Okay.
And then your class has to reflect those. But with Black Swan, we're just like, play what music you want, play do if you want to do some jumping jacks. I don't know, whatever makes you unique as a person. Whatever you have to offer that nobody else does. That's what we want to see. And my personal feeling with that is I don't just want to tell people, be yourself, do your own best thing.
That's easier said than done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just trying to do that on my own. But what I think is that if you set the example, people are going to be more likely to follow. You know, I think that's the best way to teach, especially these kind of intangible things, you know? What does it mean to be yourself? You know, so I think that's for you to figure out on your own, but
yeah, it's very subjective.
If I can be myself and do great things, then I think that's setting a good example for you to do.
Yeah, man, that's a really good point. I did stand-up comedy for about 6 years, I think I told you, and my podcast in Tampa was about stand-up comedy and mixed martial arts, but the one thing I realized with stand-up comedy, and I didn't do it long enough to really be like, you know, top tier, like full bravado, but I did a pretty decent job, and the one thing I realized is whenever I tried to portray somebody that I wasn't, a character or like the thoughts or opinions were not directly my own or obfuscated a little bit, the audience just never took me on the journey. They never went with me on the journey because there's the genuine, the genuineness of the bit was gone, and they can sense it. So you're right. When somebody can actually be themselves and they can, just be organic and yet efficient and professional, it just allows somebody to be a little bit looser and kind of try to do the same themselves.
Yeah.
Easier said than done, but the really good comics, what you see on stage is exactly what you see off stage.
Yeah.
May not be as confident because that's their space,
but
it's the same opinion, same mindset, same person. The people that play a character, some of them, you know, do a good job, but for the most part, they're not real, like, they're not the kind of comic that you would say, I really share their vision. They just entertain you.
Right.
And as a great comic, I always feel you need to share your vision and the audience needs to embrace your vision for it to be successful. And so the organicness and the real personal aspect of it, it's got to be there.
Yeah.
I went off on a tangent there.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's all relevant. I think that, that yoga really puts you in that space where you can start to even realize the ego and even start to see it as something like this incessant thought pattern that just doesn't go, and then for brief moments like in Shavasana, in different types of breath work, you get that where the ego starts to step back, and then you feel like this sense of calm and almost just presence. The judgment stops, the worrying stops, and you just feel like yourself. And so that's what I'm going for here. And so that's what I think Black Swan is all about, in addition to being accessible, right? So one of the main things
that... Sorry, that was Brody there choking on a ball.
No, I like it. Yeah.
He makes sporadic appearances.
He's an inspiration.
Back to what you were saying. Yeah. Sorry.
No. We're making it accessible. So by making the focus on being yourself, we're not emphasizing that you do an arm balance every time. We're not making that the goal or the focus of you getting into this incredible posture. We just want you to move around and connect with the people around you. And then if you get into an awesome posture, that's great. But that's not the focus. We're really not trying to make people feel pressured to do something that they don't feel ready to do.
Now, with the routines that your instructors go through, do you have like a standards and practices thing that you go through to say, hey, I need to kind of see like what your construct looks like, or make sure that your thought process marries with the vision of a Black Swan, or do you just trust them based on their resume?
Yeah. So we do an audition for everybody. So that's what the first few months that I was here, I was doing a bunch of auditions at Cheeseman Park.
Okay. Which was awesome. That's where I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where you did the class. And so we would just meet teachers there and have them take have them take us through their class. And so what we're looking for is not that you know the name of every pose, that you know all the Sanskrit. What we're looking for is that you can make a mistake and then crack a joke about it.
Okay.
And you can just interact with your students and just be aware and present and be yourself, you know. And that's going to help put people at ease. We're not necessarily after the people that are already good at yoga. Mm-hmm. All right. We want everybody. Okay. People that feel uncomfortable going to a yoga class. Like that's my target audience.
I love it.
People that don't feel like comfortable in yoga clothes or they feel silly doing a downward dog. I want you to break down that barrier between you and this very accessible way to move your body. That's the theme of this is accessible yoga. In addition to that, we're donation based. So, that's just part of the accessible theme that anybody should come, regardless of your financial situation.
I love it. And people definitely donate. I mean, you know, after the classes that I've gone to, people were really appreciative. They enjoyed the style of the instructor and people donated. So, don't think that people are just coming and freeloading off of Sean's good nature. I mean, people do appreciate this and do give back. So yeah. There's a lot of reciprocity there.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Like I had a girlfriend that she was German and she went back to Germany to do this and she couldn't get people to donate. Like
really?
She couldn't do the donation based idea. People wouldn't do it.
Huh. Different culture.
They'll donate, you know, just the bare minimum, which we depend on people donating a little more, a little less sometimes. But we can't just have everybody give a dollar.
Yeah.
Or we won't stay open. So it's just interesting that it at least here, it seems like in order to receive something, you kind of have to give something. And then that's how you value that thing.
Agreed.
You know, you're going to pay more attention to the class if you paid $20 than if you paid 50 cents.
Yeah. And you need that. I mean, you know, there needs to be some validation that, you know, the audience, other than just smiling and leaving, is receiving your services well, too. I mean, it still is a business, even though it's donation based.
Right. Right. And so that's just an amazing thing that actually works.
Cool.
You know?
Cool.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that you're big into breathing. One of the things that, you know, from rolling with me in jiu-jitsu.
I'm breathing right now.
One of the things that I struggle with, just, you know, from past anxiety and just kind of being like a tense person most of my life is my breathing, man. Like, you know, I'll get into a position and not have the right mental focus and I stop breathing until I can figure out where I want to be. But in that time where I stop breathing, I screw myself for the entire duration of whatever I'm doing because I can never catch up.
Yeah.
So, like, I've looked into holotropic breathing. I've done, you know, a lot of pranayama breath work myself. And I found those things to be useful. But with yoga, I'm sure it's so much more important for you to have that as a skill set to be a useful or to be a valid yoga instructor.
Absolutely, man. So I'm curious, what you've tried holotropic and some different types of pranayama. What any technique or that you like or that really works for you?
Yeah, I do like pranayama. So when we did the ayahuasca experience in Orlando, they taught us a lot of pranayama variations and we did a lot of breath work to prepare for the experience, which I thought was awesome. So, you know, just the holding one nostril, exiting, you know, breathing in from the other one, kind of rotating which nostril is closed.
Yeah.
Traditional pranayama. I found that to be helpful. It's not comprehensive, you know, it's just a basic skill to kind of, you know, soften my mood a little bit.
Sure.
But I haven't really done any holotropic. I've done more research and kind of heard from other people.
Yeah.
I haven't delved into it myself, but I've heard it's both intense and can incite the same type of experience that you can get on like normal entheogens.
Yes.
Have you done it?
I have.
Ooh.
With holotropic, it's very involved. It's very energy intense. So you're in this room with cushions and you're in a very comfortable, like all padded up and on bolsters and stuff and blankets. And then there was a lot of preamble, like the lady that taught us was, you know, just talking about how amazing the experience is. So there's a lot of build up and then you're like, okay, this sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So you get to it and they turn on this music where it's like tribal percussion, just loud, loud drums. And you start breathing fully in and fully out.
Okay.
And fully in And so it's a very, very full, complete breath cycle. And you're just trying to get yourself to a mental space of, so you might compare it to the Wim Hof where you're hyperventilating.
And that's what I've heard. I've heard there's like a, it's not constricted blood flow, but necessarily, but like redirected or consolidated blood flow,
yeah.
Which makes your brain kind of think that the serotonin goes crazy.
So there's, try to ask one of these, instructors the science behind it.
Okay.
And I don't think there's a lot. I think it's anecdotal experiences. And
gotcha.
And so everybody in that room had, you know, some sort of experience. I didn't have a particularly psychedelic experience. However, I felt euphoric afterwards. I felt very energized and at that same time relaxed.
Hmm.
But there were people around that were crying or laughing uncontrollably or writhing or, you know, just in some way having an amazing experience. And I don't know if that comes from like having trauma that you needed to release or what, but some people had a far more intense experience than I did.
Yeah. I think it's a combination of two things because it triggers a lot of the same receptors that other entheogens trigger as well. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you'll have a lot of the same benefits, but with ayahuasca, what I noticed is the people that, and this was just through integration and just knowing who I was dealing with, the people that vomited excessively, the people that writhed in ostensible pain, those people had a lot going on.
Yeah.
They didn't have a lot of introspection. They didn't do a lot of therapy. They didn't necessarily have the right mindset or preparatory skills going into it.
Yes.
There was just a lot going on that had to be released. So
yes.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And consider yourself, you know, give yourself a pat on the back because it means if you've done some work going into it and didn't have as much built up that had to be released.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And I think that like holotropic is not my favorite, but it just because it's so much work, you're breathing like that for 45 minutes.
Ugh.
And so it's a lot of work, to get. So, I mean, I prefer other types of breath work. I prefer Wim Hof technique.
What is that? I know Wim Hof from Joe Rogan and, you know, his, ascents of Mount Everest in his shorts or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And in record time.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
did that.
Oh, he's a madman.
So, you know, and he's really good at just getting his message out there. He's just like, I met him, he came to, On It. Which is
in Austin.
They who owns Black Swan, and he taught us all this his technique, you know, and the warm up, and then the actual technique, and then we jumped in Aubrey's pool, which was filled with ice. So we got the full experience. Like I was, you know, because I had been following him for a while before that, and I was like, oh shit, yeah, I get to meet Wim Hof. But the way it works is you have to be relaxed. You want your heart rate to be down before you start the technique.
Okay.
So you don't want to just come off a run and then start that. I say this as I do it at the end of my workouts. So it's, you know, but ideally you're doing it before your workout.
There's a recipe. If you want to follow the recipe. Okay.
But it's still impactful whenever you do it.
Okay.
But yeah, you want to be relaxed to get the most bang for your buck. So like lately I've been doing it in the morning. But sometimes I'll do it after my workout. But anyways, you do 2 to 3 minutes of hyperventilating. So that means you're inhaling as much as you can. And he's got a specific way to do that.
Okay.
And then you're exhaling about half the breath. So 100% inhale, and you're just releasing on the exhale. And what that does is flood your bloodstream with oxygen so that it's increasing from, I think, at default at just baseline is around 94, 96% saturation. So you're bringing it up to 99.
So you're blood doping, essentially.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Wow.
It's a performance-enhancing
drug.
Shout
out to Lance Armstrong.
And then you see, like, different athletes that are using this, too, because there's those benefits. What's really interesting about the Wim Hof technique is, so I'll finish up with that, the steps to it. So you do 2 to 3 minutes of that, and then you hold your breath. And because of that buildup of oxygen, you are able to hold your breath for quite a while longer. Okay, so with some practice, it's 2-3 minute breath hold. Okay. And you feel it surprisingly calm and at ease during that hold, surprisingly present, where your ego starts to go away and you just become more aware. Beautiful.
Very similar to psychedelics.
Yeah.
And that's my aunt. My aunt is she's a non-traditional healing professional, has been doing it forever, super, super knowledgeable about the space. And she did a lot of holotropic breathing.
Yeah.
And she said she had mystical experiences. So yeah.
I believe it, man.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah. I think it's real. And I think that, you know, the best truth that, you know, objectively we can all agree on is like science. And the gold standard to that is, you know, the double blind study or whatever. But that's not available on so much of this stuff. But what Wim has done is like gotten scientists and scholars to measure his hormone levels and all his vital signs while he's doing this. So he can actually get some concrete evidence.
I love it.
So you do that breath hold after 2-3 minutes of hyperventilating, and then you take a giant breath in. And at that point, after you've held your breath for so long, you are ready to receive oxygen. So you get like a nice big hit of oxygen, and you hold that and you squeeze and you isometrically contract every muscle in your body. So it's really intense.
Wow.
But then you get this experience of kind of leaving your body. You might pass out, you might forget where you are. It's fairly similar to a DMT trip where you experience just a wave of emotion and sensation all at once. So it's kind of like you have some bad stuff, some good stuff, but they all balance together to make you just, I don't know, serene.
So like DMT, is it a short-lived experience?
DMT is short.
But what about the holotropic effects?
With the Wim Hof effects, it's very short.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe like, you know, 10, 30 seconds of just bliss, or just some kind of emotional release. What I meant to say. So during that breath hold, you're chill, right? And you can do more push-ups than you can normally.
Really?
Yes.
Well, the blood doping, man. I mean, it's supposed to be a performance enhancer.
Yeah. Yeah, but like you hear that and you don't really believe it until you see it or do it.
Yeah.
And I did it and I was like, wow, I can just push, you know, while you're holding your breath, which is, you know, one of the gimmicks that he does to like show this technique is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think just being able to completely manage and create the experience without anything else other than just some breath work. Yeah. That to me is the most novel aspect of that type of experience. I mean, you're not taking anything, you're not consuming anything other than just air and body contraction. That's crazy.
So what one thing I like to say to my students about the breath is no matter what, so you might injure your shoulder and you can't do jiu-jitsu. You might break whatever and you have to stop, but you can always breathe. Hmm. There's never a time when you can't breathe until you're dead. And at that point, it doesn't matter. So,
good point.
So this is an accessible tool to everybody. Another thing is think about how much focus people spend on their diet or exercise.
Yeah.
And so you eat a few times a day and you plan that out. And you know that if you eat, I'll call whole foods, all right, whatever. I know people are on a lot of different diets, but if you eat what you consider to be a healthy diet, you're going to feel results from that. You're going to feel better, more energy, whatever it is.
Sure.
And then same thing, if you're drinking enough water, if you're doing your workouts, you're feeling better. These are far less direct, I believe, than the breath, which you are doing every single second, right? So by modifying the breath, the cumulative impact,
I gotcha. Yeah.
Throughout a day, throughout weeks, is just it's a far more direct approach to healing, to medicine. So I think it's the most accessible form of medicine that we have.
And you're just taking something that you already do and tweaking it and making better use of it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it, man. And the holotropic breathing, I don't know. Would you say Wim Hof is like the expert on breath work? Like, if people really wanted to get more insight into the benefits of holotropic or just breath work in general, would that be a good place to start?
So I would call Wim Hof more of a cheerleader for breathwork.
Okay, all right.
He's not so articulate with the science.
Gotcha.
When you listen to him, yes, I encourage you to listen to him if you're trying to get into this.
Okay.
Because he's going to tell you a bunch of stuff that'll inspire you. And he's so magnetic with his personality that you're like, this guy, you know, he's a little crazy, but he's doing stuff that works. And if you look at his story and like his past about like the things he had to overcome and how he used breath work to do that, it's just amazing. So if you're looking for information though on breath work, if you're looking for more science, I would recommend two books. One is called Breathe, all right, conveniently, by James Nestor.
Okay.
And the other one is called The Oxygen Advantage by Patrick McEwen.
Fantastic.
And so that's a very science-based, logical, you know, if you're like me, you need some like some proof, some concrete evidence, or at least I'm reassured by that. Then those are a couple of books to get you started.
Awesome. Man.
Really accessible. You don't need a science background or anything.
I love it. I love it. So yeah, I personally, if I can kind of get to the same place with mushrooms or with other things, for me, like the breath work just seems just, I'm intimidated by it. Right. So I haven't really delved into that level of breath work, but at some point I want to get there. So hopefully I'll have some experiences in the near future that I can report back to the audience about.
Okay.
But not there yet.
If you wanted to do it right now, I could guide you through a Wim Hof.
What? Not on the podcast, because I try to keep these to half an hour, 45 minutes if I can. But
cool.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll do an integration testimonial to talk about how the experience went.
I'm happy to guide you through it anytime.
I love it, man. I love it.
Oh, yeah! Sounds like a good time to interrupt and provide you with a health segment from Wifey Jill. Here we go.
Hello.
Jill, thanks for being here. What are you going to educate us on this week?
Well, I believe last week we talked about hen of the woods. Is that correct?
The maitake.
So we are going to pivot and talk about the good old chicken of the woods.
Everybody likes chicken.
Or everything tastes like chicken, whether you, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, not everything. I mean, things touted as tasting like chicken, not always the case. But in this case, supposedly, tell us about your mushroom.
Yeah, so this mushroom does make a good substitute for chicken meat if well cooked. So it did earn its name. It's not like it was scared chicken of the woods.
Ah, I like that. A little humor.
But alternate names also include crab of the woods. The sulfur shelf?
Yeah, so the way that it grows, I don't have any personal experience growing it.
Yeah, we neither of us have worked with it before.
We aspire to change that, however. But from what I've read, what I've seen online, it appears to grow in like a shelf pattern, like little branches growing out from the wood, like yellowy, gold colored branches. And so,
yeah, like a fan shape,
right?
Semicircular, a suede like surface texture. But yeah, the yellows, oranges, and it looks like when they're older, they start fading to white, FYI.
Okay. I wonder, is that older or oxidized? I wonder.
It just says older, it doesn't say anything about oxidation.
Gotcha.
I've
never really seen them available for purchase, like at the supermarket or the farmer's market. They're pretty hard to come by.
Yeah, and it might be because they grow in wood.
Right, oak and other types of wood. I think the edible ones most often grow in oak.
Okay, yeah. So habitat on living or dead oak, as well as other hardwoods.
I like how they have a little necrophilia to them. Dead or alive, let's do this.
I know. I wonder difference. Let's spawn.
All right, we got off track there. I mean, Jill had her attempt at humor. That was my... All right, anyways, get back to what you're saying.
Yeah, so chicken of the woods, it's predominant throughout North America. You know, there's quite a bit of benefits from it. It's obviously going to be a low-calorie, cholesterol-free food, which all mushrooms are cholesterol-free. Mm. But in talking about it as a vegetarian chicken substitute, it has pretty high protein, considering the volume of it. So one serving has 100 grams has 33 calories. But with that, it has 14 grams of protein, which the nutritionist of me is like 14 grams of protein times 4 grams of calories per gram does not add up. So I'm going to have to fact check that piece of it.
Okay.
But basically...
That formula wasn't familiar to me and maybe some of the
Okay. So yeah. So calories, a gram of fat... 1 gram of fat is 9 calories. Okay. 1 gram of protein is 4 calories. Okay. And 1 gram of carbohydrates are 4 calories. So if something theoretically has 14 grams of protein at 4 calories per gram, they're going to have 68 calories.
Okay.
So if this is 33 calories, you can't just erase calories. So okay. Something's off here. And I'm going to have to do some research just to see... whether it's the protein content or the calorie content.
Gotcha.
But nonetheless,
for the listening audience, expect a follow-up.
We'll have a follow-up.
We're going to get the giant whiteboard out and we're just going to draw this out and we'll get back to you with our findings.
Yeah, but I will say, 100 grams of chicken of the woods, the mushroom, versus 100 grams of regular chicken, the ones with feathers.
Thanks for clarifying.
The chicken with feathers has double the protein, but 5 times the amount of calories.
Wow.
So you could theoretically just eat 2 portions of chicken of the woods, have equivalent protein, and less than half the calories.
Now, as good as this sounds, like I said, it's definitely not as readily available. What's the technical name, though? It's chicken of the woods is the friendly name, but if you look at the scientific name, it's a little less friendly.
Is it Latiporus sulfurius?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see anything where it has like the little bullhorn where it gives you the audio pronunciation.
Yeah, but we don't have that.
Latiporus sulfurius, close enough. Nonetheless, chicken of the woods is way better to work with. There's no reason to strain your brain cells trying to figure out how to pronounce the technical name.
Yeah, and even just you could order spores off Amazon. I mean, it's pretty readily available. Again, we have not worked with it before, so we're not sure how easy it is, to work with, and its fruiting capacities. But it's something you could have fun with and just play with, and reap some of the rewards. But this one, some of the additional benefits, properties of the mushrooms, are the antioxidant effects. The anti-carcinogenic, so it works great with preventing cancers and kind of reducing some of the chances of getting that, hormonal balancing. So I did read that estrogen levels, if you're looking to balance out your estrogen levels, and just FYI, men have estrogen too, it's not just women. You have a lower amount, but we both do benefit from having those hormones balanced.
Okay.
Respectively. Anti-inflammatory benefits, great with stabilizing blood sugar levels, so diabetics would benefit from this. There's a lot of perks for this one.
All that in a mushroom. I think also for the listening audience, we talked about it with the maitake, which is kind of akin in a sense that, grows off of wood and, similar environment as the chicken of the woods. It has very similar cultivating techniques. So, for example, when I read about how to cultivate the chicken of the woods or Latiporus sulfurius, if I want to get fancy, you basically take a piece of oak, preferably oak. Some of the other types of wood, they say, produces some ill effects for your stomach, can make you a little bit queasy. So if you stick with oak, it's a more proven way to get edible, non-toxic mushrooms. You take the oak, you take plugs, these little wood plugs that are soaked with, I believe it is the Latiporus sulfurius spawn, liquid culture or potentially, I'm not exactly sure, but you take these and you stick them inside the wood. So you drill holes.
But they look like Tylenol capsules, right?
There you go.
If you're thinking of a size, they look like capsule that you would take a vitamin or something. So they're about that size that you then plug. You drill a hole.
Drill a hole.
the plug-in.
The plug that contains the basis for the mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you seal the wood with beeswax to just kind of seal in all the holes, seal all the spawn. And I believe there's a preparatory step, too, where you need to sterilize the log. So preferably in a pressure cooker or something, you can sterilize that log, try to kill any bacteria.
And, you know, it makes sense that you say beeswax because honey and beeswax, it has antimicrobial effects. So like honey never expires. I don't know if you ever noticed that. I mean, it can crystallize, but honey never expires. And like mold and stuff don't grow on honey because, you know, the bees.
It is the nectar of the gods. Truly the nectar of the gods.
Yeah.
I mean, save the bees.
Hashtag save the bees.
Save the bees. All right. Well, to discuss that in more depth another time.
Yes.
All right. So what else do you have for the chicken of the woods?
So let's see.
Oh, by the way, to finish off the cultivation, you have to bury those logs once they're sealed, and then seasonally they'll yield, I don't know firsthand how much of the chicken of the woods, but they'll yield mushrooms from the log.
Okay, and it takes a while before they first sprout.
I think they said a year, year and a half, and then you'll have annual seasonal flushes of that mushroom.
Yeah, so that's like the holistic route, whereas the Amazon route I mentioned earlier, I'm not sure if that's a little different, a little bit more sped up, but it had a lot of great reviews, 5-star reviews of people, you know, having success growing these items.
Cool.
So yeah, so you can take these in pill form if you wanted to, you know, ingest them that way.
If you want the medicinal effects.
The medicinal effects.
Okay.
Yeah, because you can cook them and enjoy the savory aspects, but just really reaping the benefits from the mushrooms you can get from that from pill form. But I will say, and I'm studying this right now, is, you know, the benefits that you get from ingesting food versus ingesting the particular nutrient in pill form is just much better used by your body when it's partnered with food. The pathways as it enters your body and breaks down and the enzymes, you can take equal amounts of fiber. Let's just say this. You can take equal amounts of fiber in food form and in powder form, but your body is going to absorb and use most of the food form, where the other one you can just pass through.
Wow.
So everyone out there that's like, I'm just going to take a bunch of supplements and think that that's how I'm going to live optimally and live healthy. Try first and foremost to get it in food form, and then you can always supplement from there.
Yeah. Well, they say also with a lot of fruits and vegetables, a lot of the nutrients live in the extremities, right? The kind of the outer pieces of it. So especially if something tastes like chicken, why wouldn't you want to devour every aspect of it?
It's just if it's readily available, right. I suppose.
I guess like reishi, that one is more often found in some sort of extract or ground form.
Oh, because that one's hard.
We discussed that a few episodes ago.
Yeah, that one's a little bit, I think that's more inedible, and it has to be taken in teas, if I'm not mistaken, or in broth form.
For shizzle.
So it's chicken of the woods. And you wanted to briefly mention what, fried chicken of the woods?
Ooh, yeah. I don't have this pulled up in front of me, but I just wanted to quickly mention there's a fried chicken mushroom. That's what it's called. But it supposedly has a radish-like taste. And if you're like me, anything that has a radish-like taste is not edible, in my opinion. I'm not a radish guy. It doesn't exist in my salad by choice. If somebody puts it in my salad, not as bad as an anchovy, but dear God, not good. So
yeah, and just a comment on that. It's also known as chicken of the road.
Roadkill.
Which is
roadkill of the woods.
An edible species of mushrooms that grows in clusters on disturbed ground, often near man-made roads such as gravel, with a faintly radish-like taste.
Ooh.
So this literally grows on the side of the road like roadkill.
Yeah, so if you want to eat radish-tasting roadkill mushrooms, then have at it with the fried chicken mushroom.
I wonder if you fry it, if it'll... I mean, because you fry anything and it's good.
I think somebody just named it frivolously.
Yeah, probably.
You know, how dare you give anything a name fried chicken unless it has some similarity to fried chicken in some way, shape, or form. All right. Well, I feel educated. I feel enriched via that conversation. Jill, thanks for giving us all the scoop on the Latifolia sulphureus. I'm pretty proud of myself that I've pronounced that like three times in a row without fucking it up.
Hopefully that's correct.
Right? Well, yeah, thanks for being here. We'll do this again next time, but I love you and you're awesome.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
I did want to provide we do a lot of mycology stuff on here. We talk about mushroom cultivation. Yeah. And I wanted to give the listening audience an update on one of the experiments I was trying. So penis envy, which I told you about, I love the fact that that's like the most potent strain of mushroom that I've come across. Mm-hmm. Penis envy is supposedly like 3 to 5 times more potent than the normal strains of psilocybin.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to cultivate that in different ways. Just, you know, if I can make, you know, X amount of penis envy versus X amount of golden teach or whatever, but the penis envy is more potent, I'm going to steer in that direction, at least for my experiments. But the way it grows, once the mycelium, the white cake is formed in whatever, mm-hmm. whether it's a bag or a container, it really doesn't do much for a while. And then these little brown clumps of what look to be dirt pop up out of the white mycelium and it freaks you out. I'm like, I don't even know. If you want to go get one, I'll show it to you.
Do you want me to go grab
it? Yeah, go grab it. I'll talk about spores. It. So if you look over against the wall over there, there's like 4 bags that are standing up with a clear white bin over top of it.
Okay.
Grab the one on there that says penis envy.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So while you're grabbing that, it sprouts these little brown clusters of, they look like dirt. I thought maybe my batch was contaminated the first time I did it. But it seems to be consistent because every experiment I've done with penis envy, these little brown things pop up. Now, also, it had like a cheesy kind of overlay on top of the mycelium. It does some very weird stuff that you don't see with other strains. So here's the bag, and I can kind of describe it. See that brown stuff in there, Sean? Like, see the like little brown clumps that are growing on top of the mycelium on the bag?
Yeah, like, kind of almost syrupy.
Yeah, I mean, they're... It's kind of like a soil construct, but no other strain has done that for me. Like they all just go from white mycelium to some sort of mushroom. But this is like a prelude to whatever's coming next.
They look a little bit waxy almost, like okay. Kind of not necessarily consistent with the texture of the rest of that surface.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's all new to me.
Yeah.
And
well, it's not new to me except for this, like no other strain does this. I don't know what this is. I don't have the science behind it. So I'm going to have to do some research to figure out what that brown stuff is and how it plays into the growth of this super awesome strain of mushrooms.
Yeah.
The cool thing about penis envy is there's uncut penis envy, albino penis envy. So there's plenty of strain variations to play with. But right now, this one's been super fun.
Yeah, you're having fun playing with your penis.
Playing with my penis. Nice. And That's a good time to start winding down. But yeah, so on the future podcast, I'm going to give you guys updates on what this means. The growth rate of penis envy is super slow too. So the juice is definitely worth the squeeze, but it takes a long ass time to squeeze.
Yeah.
And a little messy too.
Yeah. Well, as long as you're having fun while you're doing it.
Exactly, man. I mean, this is educational. It's fun. Therapy is amazing, you know, so I can't complain at all.
Yeah.
Plus, I get to have cool people like you here to talk about fun shit and mushrooms. Yeah. And dude, thank you so much for entering the Mustache Room, being part of the podcast.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I think it's great, man. I think, and I got to get that the main message across of breathwork and yoga as a thing that I just think can help anybody. So yeah, I'm just, the more I can spread that message, the better. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, definitely check Sean out, Black Swan Yoga Denver. What's the handle that you use?
So you can follow Black Swan Denver on Instagram. It's at Black Swan Yoga Denver.
Okay.
And then you can follow me on Instagram if you like. It's breath.daddy.
Breath.daddy.
That's right.
And on that note, we have a website out now, mustacheroom.com. Any spelling variation that you use, it'll take you to the same place. I have transcripts. I'm starting to publish more content to coincide with the podcast episodes on the website. So definitely check us out there. I will have the social media at Mustache Room up soon. I really appreciate everybody being here. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
We will do this again. All right. See you. Walk with me, baby. Come on and talk with me. Talk with me. Come on and take me downtown. Girl, walk with me.